Good morning. Welcome to Back Chat. I'm Danny Gittings. Your co-host this morning is Paul Zimmerman. Good
morning, Danny.
Paul. We're talking this morning about white elephant projects and infrastructure spending. The government's admitted traffic on the Hong Kong Zhuhai Macau Bridge will be about 25% less than previously estimated because of competition from another bridge and the mainland railway. And the complicated license, parking, insurance arrangements for drivers look like another reason not to use a bridge which Hong Kong has invested about $120 billion in. So does this bridge still make economic sense? What about the other large-scale infrastructure projects which have been accounting for as much as 20% of government expenditure in recent years? In some years, more than health or education. Are the express rail link, the cruise terminal, Disneyland, and even the planned $1.8 billion footbridge in Yuen Long overpriced ornaments built to appease Beijing and its concrete-pouring friends? Is the massive Capital Works Reserve Fund, which soaks up all government revenue from land premiums and spent on public works, is that to blame? Or is spending on infrastructure far-sighted and the best long-term investment for a wealthy city? Would we have the MTR, an airport, without such foresight? Email us with your thoughts. Our email address, backchat@rthk.hk. That's backchat@rthk.hk. Or you can go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio Free, and leave a comment there. Or give us a call. The number there, 233-88-266. That's 233-88-266. And later in the programme, those fireworms found on Hong Kong beaches. What on earth are they? Joining us for the main segment of the show, we have in our Queensway studio, David Webb, shareholder activist and founder of website.com, Raymond Chan, past president of the Hong Kong Institute of Surveyors, Andrew Kinlock, a specialist advisor on infrastructure and finance, and we hope to be joined shortly by Andy Kwan, the director of AC Center for Business and Economic Research. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
David Webb, let's go to you first, because you've written extensively, particularly recently, I think, on the Hong Kong Macau Zhuhai Bridge. What are your feelings here? White elephant?
Oh, definitely. I think you made a slight mistake in your introduction by saying, does this bridge still make economic sense?
You'd say it never made sense.
It never made economic sense. No. That's not the reason. I mean, if you ever watch one of these...
I'm sorry, Backchat's not tough enough for this.
One of these yes minister type things. Minister, it's not for the purposes of getting people across the bay. It's for the purposes of providing jobs for the construction sector and profits for the construction industry. And it's for the purposes of national pride that we do these things, not for any economic and rational reason. If we were even going to build a bridge across the bay, and even if it had made economic sense, it would have made more economic sense to include a railway on it. But what we've got is this white elephant, which will generate more air pollution because the only traffic on it is going to be spewing fumes, with a possible exception of a few electric cars, if you can summon up the effort to get yourself one of the permits. It's cost $120 billion. Of course, that money was sunk before they even decided how much they were going to charge people to use it. And now that they have produced some sorts of charges, it's quite clear that it's a cross-subsidy to the freight industry, because they're going to pay almost, I think it's less for a container truck than it is for a private car to use a bridge, something like that. Mm-hmm. Certainly not based on market forces or any kind of electronic road pricing. It's more based on central planning, which the whole project is. And it crosses three jurisdictions. If you have a car crash on the middle of the bridge, I think it'll be under mainland law. If you shoot somebody in your car while you're driving across the bridge, it'll be subject to the death penalty for a capital offence under mainland law.
But surely those are management problems. Where is this a white elephant? Does it lack economic sense? Is it overdesigned?
Well, where's the cost-benefit analysis?
Are we ripped off by the construction industry? I mean, what are the three? What are the causes of this?
Even if the construction industry was making a fair profit on it, and I suspect actually the centrally planned joint venture with a mainland state-owned enterprise, it might even be doing it for less than fair market prices. That's not the issue, really. It's about how much are we spending on the whole thing in the first place. But let's take a big step back here, because if this is meant to bring us all closer together as parts of the so-called Greater Bay Area, which 20 years ago was called the Greater Pearl River Delta in Tung Chee Hwa's era, then why is it that we have so much bureaucracy and paperwork to use the damn thing? Because you're going through three jurisdictions. You're leaving Hong Kong jurisdiction, going into mainland jurisdiction across the bridge. There's been no talk about co-location on this one, of course, unlike the express rail link. And then you arrive, if you turn left and go into Macau, you're into another jurisdiction. To use it, you're going to need three insurance policies, one in case you have a crash in mainland territory on the bridge, one in case you have an accident in Hong Kong, which you should already have if you start here, and then another one for Macau, even if you're just parking there, presumably because you might knock someone over in the car park, because it's a park-and-ride scheme. You can't actually go in unless you have one of 150 permits allocated to Hong Kong businessmen who have a business in Macau, or from the other end, 150 Macanese business persons who might have a business in Hong Kong. But there are quotas all over the place for this. There's a monopoly on the shuttle bus that goes to and fro on the bridge. It's not at all clear to me whether you might even need a visa to enter China if you're crossing the bridge, because you're technically in the country.
Sure, but all of these are management issues. We can expect them to be resolved. I mean, C.Y. Leung at a recent ULI conference suggested that under his scheme for the Greater Bay Area, he had proposed to the powers that be that all Hong Kong licensed vehicles have free entry into the mainland. So he wants to make sure. And of course, to wonder about the reciprocal arrangement then, because if all
free entry, no passport checks, customs checks.
You're going to have those checks, of course, for the time being,
right,
until 2047
or whenever we get absorbed. Or perhaps, but there's a much better solution to all of this. If the mainland truly believes in the strength of our system under the one country, two systems model, and in Macau's system, which is almost the same as ours, but it has continental law rather than common law, why aren't we talking about merging into a Greater Bay SAR and introducing capitalism to the whole of this vibrant economy? They're talking about cities that should be together. It's very relevant, because then, of course, you could travel freely without any passport or customs checks within the Greater Bay SAR. You would have to have a boundary around that.
Your point would be that these things are white elephants because of these bureaucratic problems we currently have.
Economically justified. They don't look at the opportunity cost. They don't look at the rates of return, and they don't look at the external damage that they're causing to the environment too. Yeah.
Okay, let's bring in some of our other guests. So we're discussing infrastructure projects in Hong Kong on the back of the revelation this week that the traffic projections on the Hong Kong Macau Zhuhai Bridge are a lot lower than was initially anticipated. The government had known this for at least a couple of years, but it's only coming out now. If you have any thoughts, do email us, backchat@rthk.hk. Some emails coming in already. We'll get to those shortly. We can go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio Free, and leave a comment there. Now let's bring in Raymond Chan, past president of the Hong Kong Institute of Surveyors. Good morning, Mr. Chan.
Good morning.
Now, David Webb just now taking a very sceptical view on the Hong Kong-Macau Zhuhai Bridge. Do you share that?
I'm not on the money side. Maybe it is too expensive for us, I think. The price tag is a bit high. But the purpose of that bridge is beyond that. I remember when I was a kid, we debate on whether we build the Coss Harbour Tunnel, the first Coss Harbour Tunnel. We have the ferries, and the Coss Harbour Tunnel is going to cost a lot of money, and it will charge high, and nobody is going to use it. And you see today that is a must. I think the bridge is on the long term. Okay, to start with, maybe we don't get a good return on our investment, but in the long term, that is a must, I would say.
In the long term, you still won't. I mean, the numbers never made sense. That's why they weren't presented on that basis. Mm. It was all part of so-called integration with the motherland, or fatherland, if you prefer.
Raymond Chan, I think your point is we have to look to the future. We've actually had a comment from a listener making the same point, that there was opposition to the Cross Harbour Tunnel, there was opposition to the MTR. Now
there was opposition to the motor car before the court.
Okay, yes, thank you, David.
Horse and cart was abolished.
Let the other guests come in. Raymond Chan, right? You were saying that we need to look to the future with projects like this.
Yeah. Of course.
Yes.
And we are investing into our next generation, actually. We are not making the use of the money today. That is our view.
But Raymond, can we agree with David on his comment that there could have been a better design for the bridge? I mean, it could have been included the link to Shenzhen instead of now we have a separate bridge from Shenzhen across and in Hong Kong across, and we also don't have any rail link on it. I mean, we could have had a better design, is it?
Maybe. And in fact, before the bridge is actually built, I wonder whether it is feasible, because I have been to Macau many, many times, and it is a long way, and the weather is rough, can be very rough in bad time. And I actually wonder whether such a bridge can be built. And I think if we incorporate a railway in the bridge, there's going to be a lot more technical difficulties to overcome, because railways have its own requirement or specifications, and it's not more so adaptable as cars. For example, we have some settlement, for example, in part of the succession night settlement that may really disable the railway. So building a railway bridge is different than building a bridge just for cars.
Okay, so you say that the bridge sections and the tunnel sections are still moving settlement, but is that going to be a risk to the tunnel section? I mean, there's quite a bit of underwater. These tunnel sections have been floated into the silt on the seabed. I mean, if these things are going to shift, we're going to get leakage or even worse, isn't it?
We build anything on land, we have to allow for movement. Even a high-rise building in the urban area, we still allow for some movement. And or some high-rise building, we allow for window, and high-rise building, it shakes, actually, under strong wind. And if you have such a long bridge, and we are really building on, I would say, muddy ground, because it is actually a river delta,
mm-hmm.
And we have to allow for some kind of movement. We have to adopt it and allow for it.
Well, it would have been more expensive, but I think your point on weather is probably a good one. That it will be closed during strong winds, won't it? I mean, if we get a typhoon blowing across the delta, just as they stop the ferries to Macau, they're going to be stopping traffic on the bridge. Otherwise, the high-sided vehicles will just blow over.
Okay, let's bring in another guest, Andrew Kinloch. Andrew Kinloch's the specialist advisor on infrastructure finance. Good morning. We've been talking so far specifically about the bridge, but we also want to broaden this out in thinking about whether Hong Kong spends too much on infrastructure. As I mentioned at the start of the program, in some years we're spending more than on health or educational infrastructure. Is there something lopsided here?
I actually think there is. And I think there's a number of white elephants that the Hong Kong government has...
Sorry, can you just move a little closer to the microphone?
Sorry.
Yeah.
I actually agree that there is a tendency by the Hong Kong government to overinvest into infrastructure, and the bridge to Macau and Zhuhai is certainly an example of that, as I've been saying for several years. I'm not worried about the aggregate cost. It is a big project. It is engineeringly ambitious. But I do see that the government is very careful to quote either its share of the project or its share of the bridge without mentioning all the ancillary infrastructure, like the roads that are required to reach the bridge.
And the Chinese investment in the bridge.
I'd go further than David and say the cost is going to be about 200 billion Hongki. Mm. Now, that's okay if it's justified by appropriate benefits. And frankly, those aren't there. There's no opportunities to develop real estate along the route, which often saves infrastructure projects. Most freight that is not time sensitive moves around the delta perfectly well right now by barge. Time sensitive freight could have been flown out of a different airport, not out of Hong Kong necessarily. Passengers can, pedestrians can now go by bus. Well, that's not much different from going by ferry. So the benefits never were there in the first place. And if the estimates have been reduced by 25%, well, that doesn't really change the decision.
But you think this is part of a wider trend that we're too ready to sort of pump money into infrastructure in Hong Kong? You were saying.
Yes, I think it's an advertisement for greater discussion within the Greater Bay Area concept, which is not terribly well defined as yet, but the idea of Guangdong government building a competing bridge from Zhongshan to Shenzhen that will undermine the traffic numbers on this bridge is a clear demonstration of lack of coordination between the governments. I think the second illustration of that is how the five airports are managed. So I'm not sure whether you want to talk about...
Five airports.
Around the PRD.
Hong
Kong, Shenzhen, Zhuhai,
Macau,
and
Guangzhou, I suppose, yes.
So if you want to move goods out of Zhongshan, for example, wouldn't it be easier to drive a truck down to Zhuhai, which is hugely underutilized? It is so underutilized that it can afford to close for several days for its air show. And it's a lot cheaper to improve connections to Zhuhai Airport than it is to build a bridge across to Hong Kong.
Okay, let's bring in another of our guests, Andy Kwan. Andy Kwan, Director of the AC Centre for Business and Economic Research. Good morning, Mr. Kwan. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Now, how about on that general point? You just heard Andrew Kinglock saying that maybe we don't think enough about coordination and we do put too much emphasis on infrastructure in Hong Kong. Do you agree?
Well, it's debatable because it all comes down to economic benefit. Because when you look at the initial report issued by the government, way back in 2008, I looked at the initial report. The economic internal rate of return for this project, the bridge, is about 9%. Of course, the number can be massaged. Because it all depends on traffic projection, okay? Right now, we know that the traffic projection will be much lower, so the internal rate of return would be much lower. I think, like, the government really depends... When the government starts to think about the infrastructure, they usually ask some consultants to estimate the future, the benefit, something like that. Usually the initial reports would tell you the internal rate of return is pretty okay, and later on, and then it all comes back to the reality, and the return is not that okay. When you look at the high speed railway, that kind of stuff, like I think the economic internal rate of return is about 3-4%, which is very very low. Well, we all know that, like, when the government wants to do something, want to push, want to build some infrastructure, and something like that, you have to get money, you have to get approval from the electrical government to get money. So the government would make a beautiful figure for the infrastructure. But at this stage, when you look at the traffic projection, it's much lower than before. It means the economic benefit is much lower. But what can you do? It's all right, Bill.
Well, maybe you're more careful about these projects in the future. Is that the answer?
Exactly. But the thing about the infrastructure is, like, the government usually gives you a beautiful number, very good good number, at least acceptable number. And it's almost built. Say it's almost built, and then say about the high speed the high speed railway. That thing is like you realize that the projections are all off. So what can you do?
The next one that's coming up is the East Lantau Metropolis. So we see that with the end of these big projects, the next big white elephant that is in the making is the East Lantau Metropolis. So what can we learn from?
Hang on, but we don't actually know it's a white elephant yet when it hasn't even started.
Well, but it's.
But this is the time.
We see this kind of building up of arguments.
It's too busy, isn't it?
We see this building up of arguments for the construction of this next large-scale infrastructure with the East Lantau Metropolis. So the question is, are we going to do better? Are we going to do a better analysis if we follow Andy Kwan?
Let me put it this way. Like, when the government wants to start something, you're going to have some beautiful analysis, okay? So, but when you finish a project, say, you end up with some numbers which is very disappointing. So that's the thing we have to be concerned. Now, I think we have to be concerned about the motive behind. So something like when we talk about the economic return, say maybe we should ask for some much higher economic return. Then we have a buffer.
You know, Andy, these analysis that the government provides, they always talk about externalities. They never try to justify a project based on, for example, the tolls that you'll collect on the bridge versus the cost of the bridge. They'll come up with this, as you say, beautiful pie-in-the-sky analysis. But it's basically what they do is say, yes, but it will create jobs left, right and centre. Mm. It will stimulate this much in the economy. They did the same thing for Hong Kong Disneyland when they allocated 120 hectares plus the reserve site to that entity. What they said was, well, yeah, maybe it won't make money on an operating basis, but it will attract all these tourists to Hong Kong. But the correct question then is, but why are you counting those benefits when you're also sucking up resources from the economy? People end up, with that outcome at the opportunity cost of other things they could have been doing with their labour. Mm. So, if it's a question of saying, well, there'll be more traffic to the airport, for example. Mm. Well, what's the consequence of that is we need to build a third runway. So one of the consequences of sucking in more freight traffic across that bridge is having to sink more money, $100 billion, into the airport.
Yeah.
Not because of indigenous growth in demand for flights from Hong Kong people, because the population is only going up at about 0.5% per year, and we could have used larger aircraft more efficiently on the existing landing slots rather than lots of little 737s going to third-tier cities. The existing two runways would have been enough for a long, long time. But rather than ration those resources economically, the government is now building an extension of the airport, and we're all paying for it with higher charges for using the current airport.
Okay.
I think it's okay to include external benefits in your economic calculations. The question is,
then you have to say,
what do you value those at? Mm-hmm. And that gets, fairly subjective.
If you're looking at external benefits, I think you have to look at the other possibilities, what could have been done with finite resources, if you'd put the money into more education, schools, for example. Would that have produced a higher value economy if we'd invested more in education and less in bridges?
Let's go back to Andrew. I mean, we have to simplify things, isn't it? I mean, you do calculations up front, you put up a formula. I mean, you cannot calculate everything. There is some simplification that might go both ways, to the negative and to the positive. I mean, is really those white elephants because we don't do our calculations right, or are those white elephants because we over-engineer and over-design them, or is it because we do it too expensive? We've got too many projects and our labor costs have gone through the roof and the contractors make too much money.
Let me inject some reality here. When we talk about infrastructure, if you look at one by one, so you look at the economic returns, but somehow when you have too many infrastructures, and you create a huge problem for the economy, because there's not enough labor supply in, right? So that's why you have such a high skyrocketed construction cost. So I think the government has to think very, very clearly about, do we need so many infrastructures in the sense that, at the same time, building at the same time. And you are talking about, for the past 10 years, we have many, many, many infrastructures here. And also it creates problems because, the cost of building, residential areas, all kinds of stuff like that. That kind of things, is not properly planned.
Sure, and possibly the lack of oversight at MTR is one of the same problems, too many projects at the same time.
Yeah,
But Andrew, you want to come in on this one?
Yes, I'd agree with Andy that the Donald Jung administration launched about 10 huge infrastructure projects all at the same time. And yes, not surprisingly, the cost of labour, cost of concrete, cost of absolutely everything went up hugely. So that's a question just of synchronising your planning. It's not particularly difficult.
Isn't the Capital Works Reserve Fund partly to blame for this? We've got all this money allocated into a specific fund, and then when it's there, there's a feeling you need to spend it.
No, I didn't accept that. That's
well, we've got a yes and a no there.
Okay, let's put it this way.
That's not an excuse to overspend on infrastructure when you have a wretched old age pension scheme when you have cardboard grannies collecting cardboard on the streets and okay. what is one
but
of it, the
But that's exactly the excuse.
The David Webb, the
That is
the
not
yes,
an excuse.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that is used as an excuse because they put all the land premiums into this capital works reserve fund, segregated, siloed from the rest of the budget planning process. And so they can't just, unless they make an internal transfer in their accounts, they can't just take money out of that and build more schools and hospitals.
Let's get the background clear for our listeners, right? I mean, all land premiums in Hong Kong go into this special fund, which is primarily earmarked for
infrastructure. Sorry, I take back one part. You can build the schools and hospitals, but then you've got to put the teachers and the nurses and doctors in there, and that is something that comes out of operating budget. It means expanding those departments. We've been hoarding government. The government's been hoarding public resources by over $1 trillion Hong Kong since the handover. We've got $1.5 trillion of reserves, including the exchange fund surplus, and that is money that has been bled out of the economy. That ought to be returned to it if the government doesn't need it for its operating requirements.
And not through infrastructure development.
And not by sinking it into concrete, yeah. Okay. Mm. No more concrete planning.
Yeah, can we ask Raymond? Raymond, I mean, you are very close with the Hong Kong professionals, and you've been there for a long time, and I'm sure that the Hong Kong professionals are very proud of many of the infrastructure that we have achieved in Hong Kong. But all of these stories about white elephants, I mean, how do the local professionals look at it other than jobs for their companies? Are they proud of these projects that are now online and the cost overruns and the amount of money we're spending?
I think for all this infrastructure, it actually take up a small portion of our industry, actually. And so maybe it benefits a small sector only. And, of course, yeah, affects us as a whole.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off for the news there, Raymond, but we will hold that thought. We will return to this topic in 3 minutes' time. We'll continue the discussion. We're going to say goodbye for the moment to Andy Kwan, but the discussion continues. Do email us at backchat@rthk.hk. That's backchat@rthk.hk. You can go to our Facebook page and comment there. The weather forecast is going to be mainly cloudy with sunny intervals, a few showers. Currently, the temperature is 29 degrees. The relative humidity is 82%. Stay with us. We're back in 3 minutes. The Finance Committee today will be considering plans for a controversial $1.8 billion footbridge in Yuen Long. Later in the show, we're going to be talking about those fireworms found on Hong Kong beaches. Our guests, as we continue the main segment of the discussion this morning, in our Queensway studio, David Webb, shareholder activist and founder of website.com, Raymond Chan, who's a past president of Hong Kong Institute of Surveyors, Andrew Kinlock, specialist advisor on infrastructure finance, and we hope to be joined shortly by Albert Lai. Albert Lai is the policy convener of the Professional Commons. If you have any comments on these topics, do email us, backchat@rthk.hk. That's backchat@rthk.hk. Or you can go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio Free, and leave a comment there. Let's bring in a number of comments that have been coming in from our listeners on our Facebook page. Gerard says, the Hong Kong-Macau Bridge, 15 million visitors to Macau every year from Hong Kong, mainly tourists. The bridge will be about bus and lorry traffic rather than private cars. The cruise terminal has no other purpose or transportation. It's purely a lack of planning. Kai Tak is turning into a harbour, but again, there's a lack of planning there too. It should be a municipal marina with services like restaurants and apartments and so on. However, the government is silent about possible safety hazards from Kai Tak having been used as a sewage and chemical dump for years, when Kwun Tong was a significant industrial zone that produced, amongst other items, batteries. It's not about caution, it's about an overall lack of vision. A strongly worded email from Fergus, titled White Elephants, the Bridge to Macau. It says, as an aside, the Cross Harbour Tunnel was regarded in some quarters as being a white elephant when it was under construction in the late 1960s. But back to the bridge too far. There are said to be 100 firemen to handle accidents and emergencies there. The RTHK news report I read did not say if it was 100 at any given time or split between two or three shifts. At the very minimum, it's a huge recurrent cost. And who pays? Assuming a mean salary of $25,000, there'll be station officers, brigade commanders and layers of hierarchy. That's annual recurring salary cost of $30 million for the 100 firefighters. $30 million for 100 firefighters? Leaving aside the provision for sick leave and all the support and training costs, multiply it up if they're 100 on each shift. What about the costs in transport department to help with all those multiple permits needed and all the other bods involved in a political project? We used to have a user pays principle in Hong Kong. Even the dishonourable Lord Donald of Stanley subscribed to the user pay principle in his public capacity to his policies. I hope these badged party officials and the elites that curry favour who are granted access are dipping into their own pockets to use the bridge too far so we can recover some of the huge recurrent cost. There's little chance of any return on a huge investment. Where's the tax benefit for Hong Kong of bringing casino punters to empty their pockets in Macau in any case? This is not only a white elephant, it's hugely corrupt in every sense of the word. Shameful. Lastly, where's the accountability of our officials fronting up a government radio on a government radio station to defend such projects? Answer that, Kerry Lam. We did, of course, ask government officials to join the show. Folks going on to say, they're always noticeable by their absence. Accountability to Beijing is their guiding principle. Their continual no-shows on this programme is just a sign of their disrespect for us plebs. A couple more comments from listeners. Sharon says, the bridge is for the next generation. Did I hear that correctly? Let the next generation build it then. How ridiculous to say it's for the future. In the future, we can only hope that such huge structures are made with recycled materials. And lastly, Colin, inspired by our theme of white elephants today, says, different subject, but a white elephant and still transport related. How can the stranglehold on the taxi licenses ever be broken? It's quite clear there's government vested interests. Who actually owns these licenses? Any government officials or civil servants? It costs around $6.5 million Hong Kong dollars for a taxi license. That's a farce. Clearly an engineered price with no competition. Most major countries have adopted ride-sharing apps like Uber. They should be treated as a different service, unlike the taxis, which are ride-hailing. Why cannot the government introduce a new ride-sharing service instead of sticking their head in the sand and looking after their friends? Thank you very much, Colin.
So, Raymond, before the break, we were talking about whether the professionals are proud of all these projects where there are so many critiques on the and calling them white elephants. And you said very few companies actually in Hong Kong benefit from it. Let's take one white elephant that is in the news now, which is the Yuen Long Footbridge. And I understand that the institute that you've been past president of, the Hong Kong Institute of Surveyors, together with the architects and the planners and the landscape architects, have actually now complained to government and come back with an alternative proposal for the Yuen Long Footbridge that is half the price, and that should provide for a much better solution for Yuen Long. How come that there is such a divergence in the industry among the professionals between where government is going and where the professionals themselves want to go?
For the footbridge, I'm personally also objecting that because it's spending too much money and the scheme is not, reasonably balanced scheme because it is building something complicated on difficult subsoil. When we come across difficult subsoil, we always think of simple structures rather than complicated structures in order to avoid the unnecessary high expense. So it should be fork in the other direction, is giving a reasonable solution for the purpose that you want, instead of, okay, that is what we want to build, and that is the price tag. You accept it or not. That is not the way to do things.
But isn't this kind of the same discussions that has led to all these cost overruns with the bridge and with the express rail? There were cheaper solutions for the express rail. We could have had a station, Kam Sheung Road. We didn't have to build it all the way in West Kowloon and go through the difficult subsoil under the Kowloon West Point. The Hong Kong Macau to a bridge, we got overruns. We could be building it on silt. We can't put a rail on it. It gets too complicated. I mean, aren't we in the same dilemmas here, that we're trying to do very complicated things and we make it in our life too difficult, which is, from the public's point of view, seen as professionals and construction industry filling their pockets at the cost of public money. It doesn't look very good, and now with this Union Footbridge, we seem to be doing the same.
I would say the footbridge is really serving locally. The people to be benefit from that footbridge is not that much, and it is not for Hong Kong as a whole. And the Macau Zhuhai Bridge is something different. It is really bridging Hong Kong with other parts of the mainland. And okay, you imagine, if Hong Kong do not take part in it, will they build it? Okay. I think they will build it, but not connecting to Hong Kong, connect to Shenzhen. So we will be isolated.
I don't think we're going to be isolated by not spending money on wasteful projects. Don't forget, we still have a land boundary with the mainland and plenty of crossing points there. But I want to come back on a couple of points your listeners made and other people made earlier. The Cross Harbour Tunnel was never regarded as a white elephant. It was financed by the private sector. They believed in it and they put their money up for it had a very lucrative return on it. And if we had obtained tenders to build this bridge from people who thought there was an economic return on that asset, I'd have no objection to looking at that, at least as long as you're recovering other costs and saying, look, okay, this is a private sector company, it's managed to issue bonds, it's issued shares, and it's charging market prices for travel across it. You don't have to be a member of the NPC or the CPPCC to use the bridge. But that's not the case. It is a white elephant. It's not being privately funded. They never even tried to finance it privately. The cruise terminal, a white elephant, because they did try to finance that privately. They invited tenders. Nobody wanted to do it. Even on a build-operate-transfer basis, nobody could see a return in that. So the government just threw those out the window and said, well, never mind the fact that the market's telling us that this is not viable. We'll do it anyway with public money. Things like this footbridge are just a sort of indicator of the general problem. But, of course, it's relatively small. You could build 45 of those footbridges for the price of one express rail link to Shenzhen. But they do remind us of the faults in the planning system. In terms of which well-connected people get to use this bridge, if you're a Hong Kong resident, there is a government of Hong Kong press release which says that in order to use this bridge, you must have either donated 5 million RMB to charities in the mainland or be a member at the county, municipal, provincial, or national level.
I think you mean to have a CPPCC or NPC. Individual car permit. You're not saying to use the bridge. I mean, anyone could take a bus.
Well, no, let me clarify. To have a cross-boundary permit to drive your car into the mainland from Hong Kong across the bridge, there's a quota of them, of 10,000. But to qualify, you also have to have been, if you're a Hong Kong resident, a member of either CPPCC, NPC, or have donated $5 million in the mainland.
Keep in mind on that last minute, Chi Bai Lung has promised in his new role that he's going to get free entry for every Hong Kong car. We haven't asked him the question, what will be the reciprocal rights for every car in the Pearl River Delta?
When is the big switchover from left-hand to right-hand?
What's going to do to the Hong Kong roads? But Andrew, you wanted to come in on this one.
Yes, My key point is the planning process here. Mm. So as David says, with the cruise terminal out at Kai Tak, first question was it really needed? Now things are clearly being built, so we can't do much about that. The second crucial point was how do you get there, or how do you get from there? And it has completely ruined the experience of cruise passengers coming into Hong Kong. Previously, they could have stepped off the ship in Tsim Sha Tsui and found themselves right bang in the middle of Tsim Sha Tsui with a charismatic ferry across to Hong Kong Island. Now they get dumped out in some wasteland out near Kowloon Bay, and these people are very short on time. They have money to spend. They don't need to spend it on accommodation or food, but they do have money to spend otherwise. And the whole experience of visiting Hong Kong by ship has been ruined.
That's why
was that not recognized in the the planning process, and I can't.
But it was recognised by the market when they said we're not pitching up to build this.
That's right.
We can't make it work economically.
Groups, all proposed that it should be at West Kowloon, so people get off the ship, go back into West Kowloon Cultural District, so they don't have to go into a bus and move around.
That would have been a big improvement.
Sure, they could have got off next to the Palace Museum.
Let's bring in some more comments from our listeners. Firstly, one of our most regular correspondents, Bowen. Bowen, in an email entitled, "The Underlying Problem of Today's Discussion." Bowen says, "What your guests have pointed out highlights the lack of a functional system of separation of powers, which is mandatory for a modern jurisdiction like Hong Kong. In any other modern jurisdiction, projects like the bridge and the express rail would have been subject to intense scrutiny by the legislature, where independent voices would have a chance to inject more rigorous analysis and alternative points of view, which would be taken into account. As things stand in Hong Kong, the government can railroad any initiative through LegCo, as we've seen in last week's debacle over the bill for co-location in West Kowloon." That's from Bowen. And short and to the point from another regular correspondent, Mike, an email entitled "White Elephants." Mike says, "I just love listening to those talking heads. Could have, would have, should have. Do you think it's about time to ask the Brits to come back and help us? 150 years of teaching by example, those in control are doing the same thing the Brits did. Oh, well, it's only money. Use it while it's still worth something."
So Remy, you agree that we don't do enough good planning. We don't have enough voices, not enough discussion to make sure that the projects that are decided on have been extremely well considered. Are we doing them too much of a rush? Or is it what the professionals always complain about? There is too much discussion and there is too much public consultation and we should do them even quicker.
I have been in the town planning board for 6 years, so I'm partly accountable for the cruise terminal. We have things to consider. Take, for example, the cruise terminal. We see today, because the most of the Kai Tak area is still empty. So if we imagine that when the Kai Tak area has all been built up and fully populated, and that is going to be right in the heart of the city. So we are having the cruise terminal in the heart of the city, actually.
Well, it's going to be a residential area for very wealthy people. It's not going to be the heart of the city, I mean, in terms of activity level.
No. It is in the heart of the city because it is right in the middle of the Kowloon area. So you go to the east side, the Kwun Tong, and you pass that way, that area. So it is really at the heart of the city. And when I was in the town planning board, I visited the Barcelona, the cruise terminal. Mm-hmm. And in normal days, they're almost as empty as our Kai Tak cruise terminal, believe it or not. Only when the cruise come in, they have people around there. But most of them are vacant. But Barcelona is one of the most famous and one of the best cruise terminal in the world. And actually, we invite them to give us advice on how we can do our cruise terminal. And
what did they say?
They give us professional advice. And so eventually, the town planning board approve that scheme.
I wouldn't sure. Blame yourselves on the board, because you do have to approve things unless you have good reason not to. Is the government to blame for all of this? And look at where the money's going next. The Lok Ma Chau loop, this piece of mud next to the Shenzhen River that became ours because they straightened out the river, is going to have a centrally planned, government-funded science park type expansion there. Whenever we've got very scarce land in Hong Kong, but the government likes to micromanage and centrally plan the land system. So rather than invite bids for each piece of land and say what's the highest market value for any purpose with a given plot ratio, they say no, that's going to be a data center, that's going to be a hotel, and that's going to be a great big science park, because otherwise we won't have innovation and technology. And that is a complete misunderstanding of the way companies and businesses innovate.
So you like to have free markets in the planning.
We'd have much more efficient use of our finite amount of land.
Sure.
As well. You know,
but my question to Raymond hasn't been answered, Raymond. I mean, is our planning system adequate? I mean, should we have more discussion and not rush our projects and thereby can do a better job and avoid this white elephant construction? Or is, as some people in the industry and among your professionals suggest, there got to be less discussion and less public consultation, and we just have to move faster with our projects?
I'm glad that I'm not in the town planning board, because I know that now the members in there spend long hours in board meetings, meeting with the public, making maybe repeating points. Okay,
but you never have to look at things on economic justification, do you? It's more about the environment, whether it will disturb other interests in the area, what it does to the sight lines and things like that.
Hmm. Yeah, exactly.
What concerns me is that it seems to be being left to the Finance Committee of LegCo to say no. So this footbridge up in Newen Long, how on earth did it go through the planning process and get this far? Why is it being left to the Finance Subcommittee to say how on earth can you spend this sort of money? Are there other projects out there, which are perhaps a little bit smaller, that don't meet the threshold in that they have to be presented to the Finance Committee, that we don't know about?
No, if you take the Newen Long footbridge, the history...
You're a bit of an expert on that, aren't you, Paul?
Well, it's
a strong element of designing Hong Kong.
Half a second update on that one. The original plan was to deck over the Nullah, which had provided Newen Long with fantastic public space at ground level. However, the Green Group suggested that the Nullah should become more like the river that runs through Seoul. So the DSD went to work, but DSD early on recognized they can't do it because the flood capacity, the hydraulic capacity they need is such that they can't put rocks and beautiful trees down in the Nullah. They have to keep it open. They have to, in fact, put walls on the sides of it to allow enough water to go through. So the Highways Department then has to provide the pedestrian footbridge to provide the capacity for pedestrians. So now we end up with an open Nullah and a big footbridge on top of it. And nobody has talked to each other and said, let's go back to the original plan. Let's deck over the Nullah so people can walk at street level. So we end up basically a concoction because of a lack of planning at a regional level that takes all of these different parties and puts them in one group and tries to come up with some common sense. So DSD and Highways just went their individual ways. So this is kind of what we see with our projects, isn't it? And that's why I'm asking Raymond, how are the professionals trying to figure out how to overcome these problems?
Okay, Paul, you know this very much, I think. And I'm more or less with you in your thought. We should get some simpler answer to what we want, instead of building complicated structure, and that can be better planning, I would say.
Okay, thank you very much. David Webb, closing thoughts?
I think there has to be a better way. I think you have hinted at some of the issues, like better connections between government bureaus and departments. But also, of course, we need a properly democratically elected legislative council, not one which is stuffed with vested interests that pander to each other's constituencies, including the architecture, the planning, the real estate, and so on.
Suitably broad and controversial theme to leave it on. Thank you very much, David Webb. David Webb, shareholder, activist, and founder of website.com. Thank you also very much to our other guests, Raymond Chan, past president of Hong Kong Institute of Surveyors, Andrew Kinlock, special advisor on infrastructure finance, and earlier before the news, we also heard from Andy Kwan, director of AC Center for Business and Economic Research.